Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Bonnie Warren, whose new book, with photographer Cheryl Gerber, is New Orleans Historic Homes. We'll also have a Mardi Gras visit with Rob Owen, the author, with his daughter Edie Carroll Owen, of Spy Boy Cheyenne and 96 Crayons, a Mardi Gras Indian story. Bonnie Warren is one of my favorite New Orleanians. She's a longtime fixture on our writing scene, and she's been writing articles about New Orleans homes and gardens for a very long time, appearing in the pages of New Orleans Magazine, as well as many others. At long last, here's a book of her privileged peeks into some of New Orleans' most gorgeous places, all collected in New Orleans Historic Homes, with beautiful photography by Cheryl Gerber. All taken from New Orleans Magazine. Bonnie, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you, Susan.
So, what exactly are you calling an historic home in this book? How old does the house have to be?
We set a benchmark of 100 years, and I think that was pretty on target.
And still, you had a lot to choose from to get it down to 41, I'm sure.
You know, after I finished the book, my regret was the areas that I had missed, because I was so proud of myself. I had great things, from Pigeontown, if you know where that is, and some from Bywater and the Meriden. But I didn't get there's so many houses. I would just like to write a book a year.
Okay, so we can wait for more historic homes. Now, when you look at houses as subjects like this, what are you looking for? What is it that makes a house special to you?
I really always say to everybody that if they approach me, what can I write about this house? What can I write about this room? You have to be able to say something. And the house on the cover of the book, it's in the Meriden, and it's such a great house. It has a kitchen with no upper cabinets. And the reason they did that, because they have shutters on their windows and they want a lot of light. And so they have all these base cabinets that they will pull all the way out. One is for your dishes, one is for your glasses. Who ever heard of that? Wow. So that's something to write about. Mm-hmm. I get so excited about it.
I know you do. Now, writing about homes is a lot like writing about the most personal of arts, because these are the aesthetic choices we make in our everyday lives. And sometimes there's a collaboration involved with a designer and sometimes not, isn't there?
That's very true. I mean, I love both. We have very talented designers in this town, and I love that. But I also love when somebody has done it all on their own. And you know, that's what magazines are for. Having written for most of the shelter magazines, the home magazines, people buy the magazines to get ideas. And I have a little business, and it's called Pretty as a Picture, where I go and just fluff up a house for somebody. I don't do the curtains, but I'll take the pictures down and change everything, you know, just to help them. And I think that's the whole thing. And I walk in the door, and they have 200 pages they've torn out of magazines, and they say, I like this, I like that. One time I did the model homes of the second largest apartment complex, and the lady came in from New York. She'd read a story in Metropolitan Home about people who fluff up houses, and I was one of them. And she came and she said, I want you to come over and fluff up our model homes. And I said, well, what do you like? She said, I like Ralph Lauren, but we can't pay for Ralph Lauren. I said, I can do Ralph Lauren cheap. And everything was from Pottery Barn and your local. You know, you can just buy all kind of wonderful things. You don't have mm-hmm. to spend a fortune.
So I wonder if you could pick out a few of your favorite houses. And I know that's hard.
That's not hard. That's actually easy. And you know, I just feel so honored what you talk about, people allowing you in their home.
Yes.
When people allow me in their home, I just consider that such a privilege. So many people are very, very nice. Not everybody, but they most of them are. And my favorite homes are sometimes the small ones. You know, one of my favorites is a house that is lived in by a wonderful lady. It's a single shotgun, and someone gave her this huge dining room table, so she doesn't have a living room. You walk in the door, and there is this big dining room table. They actually even gave her a banquette. So on one side, it's a banquette, and she collects Fiesta tableware.
Uh-huh.
And it's so exciting when you walk in.
All
and she's
color.
Exciting. And it's got a lot of color. Yeah, and you know, if you have a little shotgun, you keep your bicycle inside.
And that's true.
Well, her bicycle's part of the decoration. And I just loved everything about, I guess, my other one is another shotgun. And it's in what you call Pigeon Town, which is across from the streetcar barn. And it's an artist, and he is just wonderful. And everything he did in that house is just exciting. The pictures are too big for the wall almost. You know, he has things in the floor. But I think, you know, it has to be edited. There are a lot of houses. I would never publish them because they got too much stuff.
Oh, that would be my house.
Well, I've been to your house, and I loved your house, and I wish you'd let me publish it. Because what you have, do you have a room without bookcases, Susan?
No.
It's wall-to-wall bookcases. And, you know, I have got a big secret, and I shouldn't tell this on the radio.
Oh, do.
But I pay $200 a month for air-conditioned storage, because when I moved from three places to the house I now own in Algiers, I couldn't give up my books. So I rent air-conditioned storage, and there's my library sitting there. And I thought, well, I'll build shelves in my house. So I'll do this. No, that's too much work. I just am collecting new
books.
You
can just go and visit them
new
in
books.
Your library annex.
Well, I think all the time about it. I wish I could see them. But I don't think anything is more wonderful than writing about architecture and interior designs. And this town, New Orleans, is unique. I think we have a wealth of wonderful. And since I've been doing it, you know, I've only done it for 45 years.
Yeah, I know.
And I've made so many friends, and I feel like everybody gets recycled. That's the interesting thing. Do you know, I've done published three different homes of people. If they move on, they buy another house. Lo and behold, they're calling me up and say, oh, Bonnie, I sold my house. Just like I was telling you about the couple who mm-hmm. have beautiful house in the Garden District. She worked for Bill Blass, and he is the one who helped promote in the Natchez collection, all the different furniture collections, and the obviously, they've done well, but then they bought a house in the Garden District. Well, I had to go over, and the houses are both in the book mm-hmm. because they kind of were back to back. And it's the same furnishings, but it's totally different.
Yeah.
And the other one is Mark and Sarah Landrieu, and they have two houses in the book. I never get tired of this.
Oh, I know. Behind every door, there's a story.
Before I came this morning, I had a call from a lady who I've published her daughter-in-law is an architect. I published her house. I published her son and daughter-in-law's house. So two of them, and now the daughter-in-law designed her house. She wrote me and said, okay, I'm ready. Come over. I find that so exciting.
It is. Now, I have to tell you, the two of my favorite rooms are in this book, and one of them is that room at Joe DeSalvo and Rosemary James Faulkner House, that guest room.
Oh.
With those built-in bookcases and that comfy bed. Don't you love that golden light in there?
I think she's a genius. And I love everything she's ever done. You know, she had a wonderful little double shotgun at another point when she was on WWL TV, if you mm-hmm. remember. And I went over there and did that. I actually did that for a national magazine. And I kind of fell in love with, she has such wonderful taste. Now, of course, she has beautiful French antiques.
Mm-hmm.
Then she was just starting out, and it was still, she just is very talented.
And Susie Hoskins' wonderful library, too. That was another one.
You know, there's two houses of Rosemary James in here.
Yes.
Because she had that wonderful loft for her, studio office, guest house. And then she told me all the famous writers who'd stayed at her house.
I know, quite a guest list. Now, is there anything that you think characterizes New Orleans houses and decorating? Is there any specific thing to our area?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that. Nobody's ever asked that question. The free spirit that is New Orleans is absolutely reflected in people's homes. People are not afraid to do whatever it is. I love that. Like my friend who someone gave her the big dining room table, end of that, no couch in that house. And I just love that.
You know, I do too.
And then there are people like Doug Brantley, who's the editor of Ware, and he went over into Bywater and bought a bargain, really bargain, and he and his partner, Kevin, and they're wonderful, and they redid that house. And everything about that is just, it's exquisite. Mm-hmm. And they have a lovely garden. And people, are they not afraid to leave? You know, they pulled the wallpaper and everything off and have barge board exposed. I love that.
I do, too.
I think we're daring, don't you?
Oh, yes. I think I'm daring, having all those books everywhere about to topple over.
But that's good, just so your floor doesn't fall in.
Right. I worry about that. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you is that you have a lot of really charming, perfectly posed dogs in this book. There are some really cute dogs, and it brings home the fact that these are real homes where people live and have a good time. But where did it start, this idea that we would have these articles about houses and pictures of houses without the people?
That's very true. And you know, as you see, I really love in the magazine, I always show their picture, since when you do a book, they want it to have a broader attraction. But I want to know what do those people look like?
Yes.
And I just really enjoy that. And, you know, their homes reflect who they are. I mean, there's a wonderful house here. It's Mary Satterley's house. And she is so elegant. And the house just looks like her. And you walk in the door in what is actually a hallway. She made the dining room. And she has a marvelous glass table. I love these oversized chandeliers. That's something else about New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Don't tell them that the chandelier has to be a certain size. Forget it. If they want to, they fall in love with something twice as big, they're going to put it in their dining room.
That's right. It's so true.
Why not?
Well, if home is where the heart is, you will love New Orleans historic homes. We've been talking with the book's author, Bonnie Warren. You can meet her and photographer Cheryl Gerber Saturday, March 8th from 1 to 3 at Garden District Bookshop. Thank you so much, Bonnie.
I'm so thrilled to be here.
Rob Owens studied art at Loyola University in New Orleans and has worked as a graphic designer and professional artist for many years. He's co-authored a new book with his daughter, Edie Carroll Owen, that is perfect for Mardi Gras season. It's called Spy Boy, Cheyenne, and 96 Crayons. Rob Owen, I'm happy to welcome you to The Reading Life.
Thanks for having me.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras.
This is your first book, isn't it?
It is my first book.
So how'd the story come to you?
That's a tough one. I make art and I paint, and I tend to paint things from old photographs or pictures I've taken. And it came about, I had this overexposed photograph of a Mardi Gras Indian that I fell in love with, and I just kept drawing it repeatedly, and then over time it just merged into a narrative.
Oh. So tell us a little bit about how this story unfolds in the book.
Well, it's about an 8-year-old masking for the first time in his dad's Indian tribe. And he loves crayon colors, and he insists on coloring everything around him by the exact crayon color name, even if it sounds funny, including himself and everything.
Well, crayon colors are really some of the best words we ever learned, don't you think?
They are.
Matter blue is one of my favorites. And so he gets lost during a parade.
He does. Well, it's first-person narrative, so he's telling you the entire story, and he's really excited. It's his first time being Spy Boy, and he knows it's a huge responsibility, and he wants his dad to be proud of him and all of his tribe. And he starts walking out there and he's telling you the story, and he kind of just loses focus and sort of takes a wrong turn.
As we can all imagine.
It happens. It happens
a lot
at
Mardi Gras.
Sure.
So it's Spy Boy Cheyenne and 96 Crayons. So who's Cheyenne?
Well, Cheyenne is his deceased dog that he loved dearly, and it's now his spirit guide. So when he gets into a jam, he thinks about his love of his dog, and maybe it comes back to help him, maybe it doesn't in the story. That's, I guess, up for the reader to decide.
Right. And you did this book with your daughter.
I did. I wrote it and I illustrated. A lot of the inspiration came from my daughter just playing in the yard. And we had Indians one time mass by our house. And that was exciting. And just watching the neighborhood kids, the energy, just their perspective on life is where I got lost with this story.
And how did you and your daughter work together?
Oh, together. Well, once I came up with the concept, because I had this story where the kid loved crayons. And then when I actually started crayon coloring it, initially I was like, Edie, I'm going to need your help in this. It's my daughter's name. And I was like, and I knew she was good at crayon coloring. And it's really a lot of work to lay down these vibrant colors. It's a lot of repetitive motion. So I got her involved in it. And then she helped me pick out some of the color schemes of like the second liners and stuff like that. So she got creative. And she's an artist in her own right.
And I
love spending time with her. And it's kind of like Big Chief spending time with Spy Boy.
And how old is she now?
She's 11.
So that's pretty impressive to be a co-author at this young age.
It is.
Now, I know that you are a tremendous believer in the power of art and storytelling as ways in which we heal ourselves. And I wonder if you talk a little bit about your own journey in that regard, which has been quite remarkable.
Yeah, in 2005, I got diagnosed with a GBM brain tumor. So it was like a long road with my whole family. We relocated to Houston, Texas, to MD Anderson, and went through a bunch of treatment. And we did even art during the time period. We were held up in our apartment that we lived there. And so I did radiation, surgery, and chemotherapies and all that. And it was just a good bonding family time. Mm-hmm. Kind of a tough one, but it managed that. And I slowly began to, I lost a lot of mobility in my left side. I had right frontal lobe damage. I take medication now daily. And it was like a bonding thing where we'd create art together even there. And it just flowed from that. It's a great thing to get coordination and also your mind working again. Previously, I'd drop out a lot of sentences and I couldn't really talk in complete sentence structure. And I'd lose my point and I'd have to take a big pause and but my kids just kind of grew up with that, so they were young enough.
That's where storytelling leads you from one thing to the next.
It is, and it's just a healing process. I mean, you can tell a healing story. It's like, I think this character that I wrote about just always puts me in a good mood.
Right. This is a kid who wants to color
right.
the world,
just
really.
He loves life, he loves the moment, and he gets lost in it.
And what will you do next? Are you working on another project now?
I actually wrote this sequel to this, which is almost an all narrative. It's like the chanting back and forth. And right now I'm just looking for studio space because I had an area that I wrote this. And this was actually written like all over New Orleans. Like we did in the Garden District, down in the Quarter. I mean, this was like we did it during the blackout, some with that last hurricane. So it was like in the dark with my daughter and I drawing and crayon coloring together. So it was a real journey.
Well, there is something about this city that I find so visually shocking all the time. You turn the corner and you see something.
No question.
You never imagined.
You just fall in love with it.
Yeah, so there's no end to it. Now, you're not a native, but you've been here since high school, is that right?
Yeah, actually, I started coming here right around Spy Boy's age at about 7 or 8. And I came here with my dad. Then he relocated here. And then after my parents got divorced and I was in high school early on, then they decided to straighten me out and send me to New Orleans, which maybe wasn't the best idea.
That's unusual.
But it seemed like a good idea to them at the time. Mm-hmm. But and then I just fell in love with the architecture, what everybody else is, the vibrancy of the city, and the party aspect didn't hurt either. But
never does. And what will you do on Mardi Gras Day?
I don't know yet. I mean, typically I do Central City and I'll check out Indians and do that. I don't know. I've done so much with it. I was even thinking of going to the gumbo in Eunice or something like that. I don't know.
Something different.
Different. I don't know. I may end up doing the same thing I always do, but it's always fun.
That could be another book. There could be another book
in Eunice.
It could
be.
Well, this is certainly the season for Mardi Gras Indian celebrations. We've been talking with Rob Owen, author with his daughter Edie Carol Owen of Spy Boy, Cheyenne, and 96 Crayons. Catch those Indians on the streets and catch Spy Boy in a local bookstore. Thanks, Rob.
Sure. Bow wow.
Bow wow. That's what he says. Happy Mardi Gras.
All right. Happy Mardi Gras.
When a pair of readers fall in love, of course they want to share books. Belle and Sebastian sing about just that in Wrapped Up in Books.
It was pretty bright up on the rainbow bridge tonight. I could see into your window, although you're far away. You were racing in a car beside a boy you just don't know. You should never split at all. I wish I had two paths I could follow. I write the ending without any sorrow.
Our visiting poet today is Catherine Soniak, some of us call her Bonnie, who grew up in New Orleans, and she's here today to read a poem from her new collection, The Swing Girl.
Let me say something about The Swing Girl. The Swing Girl, is, of course, is the title of the book, and The Swing Girl actually was a little burial relic in the Athens Museum I found on the last day I was there. And it's a little tiny girl between trees on her swing, and it was buried with the little girl in her funeral chamber as a toy. There's mention here of a Tolos tomb, which is an ancient Greek tomb that is shaped like a womb as a circle, and you have to crawl in a long, narrow entrance. You actually have to crawl to get into the tomb. There are parts of the poem that are more whispered asides, and so you might hear my voice drop, and they're like another voice coming in whispering about what's happening here. There's a mention of Crete being taken over by the Greeks in brutal violence. So it's about history, too. The Swing Girl. Oh, to fly abroad again on her board roped to the limb. The territory that girl could cover, her eyes peering bird-like across the grove, the air a vector. Return to the days of her swing, not this relic. To warriors crossing the sea, ready to cross out generations with spears, then settle their weight down on this island. Far past that sack of the sacred, I hear a donkey bray, tied to the thorn tree. Empty snail shells bleach on boulders near the tomb entrance. Old inching of the soul, thirsty for a last sip of nightshade. Solemn the child who set sail for the other side, her funeral launch designed like a mouth curved upward. Slow to speak, hesitant to ask, why won't she smile anymore? The ossuary vessel is blunt. The remains are posed fetal, as if waiting to spring. My crawl from the Tholos tomb is as narrow as the way in, then down the hot path past the unwatered donkey and shells that held the damp curl of the living. After she died, the child was placed in her chamber, the swing and its girl tucked in beside her.
Oh, the territory that girl could cover. That's going to stay with people forever.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here, Bonnie Sonia.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. The First Tuesday Book Club discusses The Flamethrowers by Rachel Kushner, Tuesday, March 4th at 5:45 at Maple Street Bookshop. And Benoit signs New Orleans Best Ethnic Restaurants, Thursday, March 6th at 6 at Octavia Books. Argyle Wolf Knapp and Jeremy Labadie sign New Orleans Beer, A Hoppy History of Big Easy Brewing, Saturday, March 8th from noon to 3 at Garden District Bookshop. Today's guest, Bonnie Warren, and photographer Cheryl Gerber sign New Orleans Historic Homes Saturday, March 8th from 1 to 3 at Garden District Bookshop. Kim Harrison signs The Undead Pool Tuesday, March 11th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. S. Frederick Starr signs Last Enlightenment Wednesday, March 12th at 6 at Octavia Books. Artist Harriet Burbeck is doing an art project about the moments where art and stories meet. It's called Illustrations for Stories That Haven't Been Written. Check out the illustrations on her website, stories.happyburbeck.com, and submit stories to match. The exhibit of original drawings is on display at 10 Gallery until March 29th. Drop by, take a look, and write a story. And coming up, the Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary Festival is March 19th through 23rd. If you're looking to jumpstart your writing life, check out the opportunities for masterclasses or sign up for Richard Luce's New Orleans Writing Marathon. Check out TennesseeWilliams.net for the complete schedule. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.